And welcome to the Dark Side of Soul podcast. This is Joe.
This is Sean.
Wow, we're recording. Welcome to 2021.
Yeah, welcome.
I think that means much, really.
welcome to COVID 2.0.
Yeah. Going to that.
Hey, cool.
I was watching that Netflix show, something about death to 2020, something like that. I think that's called. I thought it's by the same people that do Black Mirror. And I thought it was like, oh God, it's another year end review. No, it's hilarious. It's Sam. I think it's a bunch of celebrities, comedians in person, kind of impersonating the types of people you see on these types of shows.
Okay.
And just making up stuff. Really hilarious.
And with that in mind, don't forget to check out, if you haven't already, our year in review, which isn't very hilarious.
But it should be.
But it's a good episode.
We should do that. You know, maybe we'll do that for April Fool's this year. We'll do an episode where we just make up stuff.
Right. And then the people can guess which are real. We can have a contest that people message us which ones are real, which ones are not. Kind of like
a do that on Soul Podcast. We occasionally do something like that. Just facts about Korea.
Right. It can be kind of like, what's that show, Fact or Fiction,
Surprise?
No. The American show, Fact or Fiction, that Riker, what's his name? Jonathan Frakes hosted.
Yeah, I think I saw like one episode.
Yeah. Thank you. They present three things and I don't, you know, like it's not a contest, but you, one of like a, one or two of them are fake, no, something like just, that. And that then you kind of guess
episode of fake stuff. We're just making
right. So,
well, today we're going to talk about weird and surprising soul landmarks. These are things. What I was doing, I was just trying to think about, we have so many ideas for the show. I'm just trying to think of things that really interest me. And it just came about as a story of, okay, some of the best parts of our Dark Side tour are the things that even we were surprised about, things that we didn't even know that were under our noses the whole time that are in the tour. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, do we have more of these? And there's some more like random things around town that I've always wanted to investigate more, research more, and I just couldn't find a theme other than it's just weird stuff that just kind of makes you go, huh, okay, yeah, that exists.
Right.
That's what this is about. You see, a lot of this stuff kind of doesn't sound like it's related other than, oh my gosh, Seoul is a weird town, and it's a lovely weird town. You got to check it out. Mm. The first thing I want to talk about is something we do on the tour. If you haven't been on the tour, spoiler alert, because it's one of my big surprises, is there is, in downtown Seoul, a section of the Berlin Wall sitting there. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, most Seoulites don't even know it's there. People walk by it all day, all night, ignoring it because they don't even know it's the Berlin Wall. That's what I find so funny. The reason people would walk by is there is some type of statute by the city that if a building goes over a certain number of stories, they have to create a piece of public art. And that's why we have all these skyscrapers with the most random public art around town. The reason being, and this will come in later in the show, is the people who are in charge of choosing the art don't really have artistic backgrounds. years and years ago, I was living in Anyang, and there was this Anyang art festival going on. And I was talking to one of the Korean artists there, and he Anyang is known for its art park and a lot of its art installations. And he just went into a rant about how it's just bureaucrats in the government that are choosing all the artwork, and they don't consult the artists, the people in the art community, people who have actually actual degrees in art. Yeah. About what should go in there. And that's why you have random stuff in the Anyang, like an MC Escher mirrored ball being rolled by a dung beetle. Things like that.
I know the curator at the Museum of Modern Art in Seoul.
Uh-huh.
Just there in Jeondong. He's mentioned stuff like that to me before. He's like, man, the street art in Seoul is weird. And he's like, I have nothing to do with it, even though I'm a chief curator and none of my colleagues have anything to do with any of this art. Don't blame us. It isn't modern Korean art. He said, modern Korean art is beautiful.
Oh, it is.
Set your opinions about modern Korean art over what you see on the streets.
A lot of the sculptures are actually imported. They're from foreign artists, and you'll find a lot of them are kind of the same thing too, which I call they're supposed to look like a sunburst, but if you look at it in an inverse way, it looks like an anus.
Oh, it's like sometimes
it has something that looks like a football coming out of it, which looks like a dingleberry coming out of the anus. You'll see this in multiple places. I've seen all over Yoido, Gangnam, Jongno. I've seen the same variations of that same sculpture, different places. Once you see it, you'll know what I'm talking about.
And then the big pointy ribbed dildo at the top of Cheonggyecheon.
Oh, yeah. And there's that. You can interpret that many ways. It looks like a unicorn horn.
Oh,
everyone interprets it a different way. I think they're talking about the big tower at the entrance of the Cheonggyecheon stream, and that was a big controversy when it came out because it was an example of, like, I think it was Lee Myung-bak and company just choosing a random piece of art from a sculpture just because he was famous.
Right. Yeah, it's
no context.
So weird.
For its location, for its history, it's just this spiral unicorn that they were hoping. This, you'll find this in articles written at the time. They're planning on that to be as iconic as the Eiffel Tower.
Nothing to do with Cheonggyecheon or Seoul. It's a seashell. It's a conch, right?
It looks like a seashell. I've been going by it because we do it on the tour all the time. My latest interpretation to make it Korean is it does use red and blue, which are commonly used in Korean, like the Korean flag and such. And they spiral into each other. And if you look at that spiral, it kind of makes it look like it's going into infinity. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's something like Korea goes and lasts forever. Anyway.
Pointy rib dildo.
And that.
Just quick on the piece of the Berlin Wall. I worked in the building that's in front of for about 6 months, and I had no idea what it was.
Yeah.
And I was out for lunch. It was right around the time you had the restaurant there on the stream. And I was probably may have had even had lunch there that day. I was coming back, had a coffee, and and I was standing there with my buddy and was drinking our coffee. And unfortunately, there was a homeless man relieving himself on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like relieving himself in number two. He was taking a dump.
Wow.
Right in front of the wall. And I was like, oh, man, oh, that's too bad. That's awful. You know, I was like, geez, you know, maybe someone should just tell the guy that the bathrooms are public. But then I got concerned. It's like, are they, do they not let him in? And I started thinking about it. And then my friend was like, oh man. And that's the Berlin Wall too. And I was like, what? That's the what? He said, yeah, that's a slab of the Berlin Wall. I had no, that's how I found out that that was the piece of the Berlin Wall.
Yeah. And people don't even, I bet you that guy had no idea what it was.
No. No.
Because it's lost in this mix of the other weird public art. There's like a sculpture of whale bones, a whale skeleton.
Just across the street.
And then there's a giant naked man bowing.
Yeah. It's the Amore Pacific building across the street from it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's a cool intersection because there's the Pagoda building on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big, impressive building, like in that part of town, right on the stream.
It's colorful at night.
Yeah. And if you can get, if you go there late at night and you get on the middle of that street, when there's no traffic, make sure there's no traffic coming, you can get a beautiful shot of Namsan, of Seoul Tower.
And Seoul Tower.
Yeah. So
I'll point that out on the tour as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah,
so people are asking, like, what is it doing there? Well, it was a gift from Germany back in 2005. Gifted to Seoul, supposedly they say it's a gift to one of the last divided countries on Earth. And a little note that Sean pointed out to me is what was the eastern side of the wall back in Berlin is now the northern side of the wall in Seoul. Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you can go with that. It is one of the few instances left of the Berlin Wall. You can get close enough to touch or, as we just heard, to poop on.
And you still poop on the Berlin Wall.
Yep. And that became a little unfortunate because I think it was 2018. It got vandalized.
Yeah.
Now it's Sean's gonna piss.
That was awful.
It pissed us off. Someone, yeah. an artist, thought he could improve on it and spray painted his art over the original graffiti from the Berlin Wall.
Yeah. Yeah, that was awful.
And it stayed that way for what, 6 months, 9 months?
For quite some time. They blocked it off for a little bit. And then they eventually, I guess they removed it somehow. I'm not sure how they did it.
How did they remove it? But it does look a little more faded than it was before.
Yeah. 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 So, and they still didn't block it off. You can still access it, right?
You can still touch it.
Yeah. You can still get up to it. Cause I don't go up there on my regular tours. So,
well, now they've renovated the area. Before it was just the slab and some benches and a lamppost from Berlin. But now they've created this whole Berlin Plaza. So it stands out a bit, and now there are plaques in English and Korean and German of what the history of the wall, why it's there and everything. But going to talk even more, I just got into this mood about talking about sculptures, weird sculptures around Seoul. Another one that's you might have heard of, you might have seen, and it sounds like something you find in a BuzzFeed article are the giant poop sculptures down where at Daehagnol. Shewa Station. You go out there and you'll see these beautiful color Dairy Queen swirls of poo. And that is the Asian shape of poop, is this swirl. I mean, that's some really good fiber if you're able to get that swirl going. I can't get that swirl going. Can you?
I cannot get a swirl. I cannot.
Cannot get the swirl.
No.
Some talent.
That's some comic book talent.
Yeah. So, yeah, there are these giant poos.
And that's so weird because Daehagnol is such an artistic place otherwise, mostly for stage, independent performances and stuff like that.
Well, it's the Broadway of Asia.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it down there.
It's gorgeous. And then there's giant poo. Again, this comes from around 2005. 2005 was one of those banner years for a lot of government beautification projects. So, well, looking back, no, it was 2006, 2007 that I did the thing in Anyang. Anyway, there was a part of Dehagno Sculpture Park in 2005. There was a competition held by the district of Jongno, and the theme was tomorrow or the future. There were 436 works submitted. 25 were selected. And these sculptures were inspired by, they were called the Poop Tail by Zhong Jianam. And there are three large and three small piles of turds. And they're like mosaic tiled. And you can lean up against them because they're kind of meant to help relax the mind or something. I don't know. You always find stuff like
that. Well, anyway. You go down there because Dehangno is such a great place. It's got such a great nightlife. I love it down there at night. Mm-hmm. And when I first discovered Dehangno, I just stopped going to places like Itaewon and Hongdae. It's like Dehangno has got way more character, better places to go. It's such a beautiful place. If you're visiting Seoul, when traveling is open again, or if this is far in the future and you're listening to this and traveling is open, you're visiting Seoul, go to Dehangno, Heihua Station, Line 4. Just a great, great part of town.
Northeast.
But I've been there at night. You know, people get drunk down there. And I've seen people try to get up on those statues and then their friends take photos to try to make it look like they're having a massive dump.
Yeah. And also, Koreans think this is an odd thing, too. It's not like, wow, it's all these fecal files. They don't care. No. So Koreans think it's kind of odd as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The other weird one, and okay, this is all stuff I was trying to research too. The poop ones took a lot of research, and a lot of what I was reading too was like a lot of, I found so little info on like why they were chosen, but I did find out that when they came about, but a lot of the sources I was reading, they're Korean language sources. They're like, this is weird. Why we have poop in the middle of the street.
And not the Berlin Wall poop either.
Yeah.
Not that poop.
Now, this is another one. Anyone who has come in through Incheon Airport, you haven't been too jet lagged enough, you've seen this while you're leaving Incheon Airport. And this is one of those things like, why did they not catch this before they put it up? It is a giant sculpture that literally looks like a cock and balls. I have a picture of it on the website, darksideofsoul.com/podcast. I might post it on our Facebook or something, but Facebook might take it down for inappropriateness. But it looks like a giant, like scale. Like scale armor, cock and balls. The name of the sculpture is Flying to the Future, and it was erected on June 17th, 2008. The person in charge was, I think the Bora Sculpture Research Institute.
Yeah, no idea.
And again, this is another contest. An international contest for environmental sculptures for landscape creation at Incheon International Airport. Now, this contest was in September 2007. And so at the time, I'm reading, there was all these press releases and just everyone, this is how typical of the, a lot of the Korean media outlets, they just copy and paste the press release. They don't try to type it up. So when I was researching this, it was just a repeat of the same lines. So they are all quoting at that time, the president of the airport corporation, E.J. He, saying, the emergence of the future symbolizes the vision and future of Incheon Airport. And we expect that this dynamic image of Incheon Airport will be deeply imprinted on airport users.
Oh boy.
And yeah, was... the Korean public saw that and went, how did you not see that this was a phallus? How yes. did you not complete with the scrotum?
Maybe they did. And they're like, yep, that's what we're going for. It's exactly what we want.
It's hard to not see what it is. I mean, I was reading descriptions that it's supposed to be an airship. Like who, like a Zeppelin? When was the last time you saw a Zeppelin in Seoul? Or two Zeppelins like or mating? Anywhere.
And not a Led Zeppelin cover.
Yeah.
An album cover. Yeah. It does look like it's a wingless airplane.
It does look like that. That's the thing though. A lot of things that we find dirty, you have to squint to find that it's dirty. This is the opposite. You have to squint to find it not dirty. Yeah, like you have to look at it and like, how is it not a cock and balls?
Hey, what don't you think that big cock statue looks like a wingless airplane?
Yeah, that's what she
and not the other way around. Yeah, it's awful. I'm just looking at a photo of it now. It's just what year was that? 2008.
Yeah,
2008. That was erected. When I first came to Korea, Incheon Airport wasn't open. I arrived in Gimpo, and I don't remember. So 2008. I don't remember the first time I saw that, but I remember. So I'm trying to remember if I traveled in 2008. I probably did, but I do remember the first time I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't read about it, hadn't heard anything about it. And I was like, what the hell is that? What what is that? What is that? That's awful.
This is it too. This is why when way back when I did my food, started my food blog, and then we started the tours. Now we're doing this podcast. This is giving me the excuse to go and answer these questions that are always been in the back of my mind. This has been my excuse. Just this episode is me collecting all the stuff of like, why is that? Period. Why is that? Yeah.
It's interesting.
Anyway,
I want everyone listening to the episode, look at the photo while we are discussing it. So we should put that.
I'll post the photos of all these on the website.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll do it on our Facebook page too.
We'll return to the podcast after this message.
Take a walk down the dark alleys of the forgotten 600-year history of bloody massacres, TV hideaways, and mourning ghosts. Come face to face with soul's deepest, darkest secrets. What lies under the concrete? For whom? The Dark Side of Soul Ghost Walk. Book now, if you dare.
Another sculpture you might have seen if you walked around near Gwanghwamun, northern Seoul, is Hammering Man.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen Hammering Man, haven't you?
Sure have. It used to be a stopping point on my tour. And I'll tell you why. But you go ahead and give everyone the... Do the background first, and then I'll tell it. Yeah.
So it looks like a giant two-dimensional cutout. I mean, giant as in like maybe three stories high. Cutout of what looks like maybe an old Soviet silhouette. Yeah. It does look like a giant communist symbol. And it's an animated statue of a man hammering. And it's in front of the Hunguk Life Building. This sculpture itself was created by Jonathan Borofsky. He created it in 1976, so it's a pretty old statue, and it's been placed in different cities around the world. It's been at the Paul Cooper Gallery in New York back in 79. It's been in Berlin, Basel, Switzerland, and Seattle. And it's supposed to be a Tunisian shoemaker hammering, and it symbolizes workers around the world. Just just classic communist description. He is known for a series of these types of hammering man sculptures, and Seoul has the distinction of having the largest one. Mm-hmm.
Something like seven of them around the world currently, something like that. It's very few, as mm-hmm. far as I remember.
The largest one. But I thought, when I first saw this, I'm like, this sounds very similar to another statue I saw. When I researched this, I found out he made this other statue I was thinking of. And if you go to the Contemporary Art Museum at Seoul Grand Park, which is one of my favorite old museums I like, there's this another two-dimensional thing, and it's animated, and it does this weird singing. It just goes, oh, 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 going just constantly. It's called Singing Man.
Clever.
Yeah, it's there.
Yeah, it's an interesting statue, that one, the Hammering Man.
I mentioned it was installed in Seoul in May 2002.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So I used to have that as a stop of my tour. I don't anymore. My routes changed a bit. But that used to be a stop because along the foot of it, just off to the side, there is a series of very strangely designed benches. So it was a nice place where I could stop the tour. Benches. So I could have the if any guests wanted to sit right while on the tour. So it was a stop. I would share a story, but that was a perfect place to do it because people could sit and rest especially if they're doing the extended tour.
We like to have really unique landmarks on our tour too.
Yeah, yeah. So then there are other segues that I use. I don't just drop into a story, but I use the landscape to kind of move my segue into stories and kind of come back. Well, but when I used to stop there and I'd have people sit down, I'd point out the statue and I'd just talk about it briefly. The Jonathan Borofsky, the Hammering Man, representing laborers and things like that. And I'd say, okay, this is not part of the tour. Then I'd go in and I'd share the story of Yu Young Chul.
Oh.
Joe gets it.
Notorious serial killer.
Who used a what?
A hammer. Oh, yeah. How Peter Palamari of you. Oh.
So when I'd stop there and then I'd get into that and he'd use, and I'd say, as I was telling the story, and he'd kill all of his victims or most of his victims with a hammer, and I'd stop for a beat, and then there was always a few guests that would go and they'd look up because I just talked about the Hammering Man, and they'd some at least one person every time would go, is this a statue for him? I wanted that reaction, right? That was the whole point. And then that it got everyone, it would get everyone laughing. And I was like, no, this is not dedicated to Yu Young Chul. So that used to be why, those were the two reasons.
That's great. I love it.
Because always looking for the segue into stories. And then that's how I'd segue and link where we were at the time into Yu Young Chul. So that's my... But I don't do that anymore. That's an older version of the tour.
Do you still do the one about the tree in front of the Canadian embassy?
No, I don't go down Jeongdong anymore. Well, not that part of Jeongdong. I come up the other way. And I never actually stopped and talked about the embassy too much, but I would sometimes talk about the tree. So... Yeah, the big tree. And I would just point it out briefly because, well, first, people notice that we're in front of the Canadian embassy because the flag's hanging there and you can walk right in front of it. So many other embassies are blocked off.
Whenever we have Canadians on the tour, they get really excited about seeing it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So if I know there's a Canadian on the tour, I'll say, oh, there's our embassy. So
they're like, where's the Tim Hortons?
Where's the Tim Hortons, eh?
Yeah.
So the tree in front of it is almost 600 years old. It's about 570 years old. Big, beautiful.
Put it in context, it's older than Queen Elizabeth I And older than Queen Elizabeth II, too.
Well, yes. So it's a pagoda tree, which in Korean is it has a different meaning. It's kind of like huehua namu, I think is what it is in Korean. I might have that wrong, but I think that's what it is in Korean.
You started digging that hole. I didn't take you there.
I think it is huehua namu. And some of these trees can be really, really beautiful, really, really tall. They're imposing. And one of the most interesting and oldest trees in Seoul is just in front of the Canadian embassy on Jeongdong.
There's a story behind this, though. A funny anecdote related to this.
The story behind why it's still there?
Yeah.
And like I was mentioning before, as I've told you before, this is just a story as it was relayed to me. I don't know how factual the story is, but it is a very interesting story.
Okay, so put an asterisk on there.
Right. So
it's a good story.
Yeah. So the tree was aged in the 70s. They figured out how old the tree was and all that kind of stuff. When the Canadian government bought the lands, apparently they bought the tree, and the construction company came to the whoever was involved at the embassy to involved in negotiating and working with the construction company when they were building the Canadian embassy. The construction company came to that person at the embassy and said, so we're gonna cut down the tree. And the embassy is like, why? The tree's like at 500, 600 years old. Why would you cut it down? And I was like, oh, well, it's in the way because the embassy comes straight along the sidewalk and it's very narrow between the tree and the front of the entrance of the embassy. So we need to make space and we're going to cut the tree down. And the embassy was like, no, you're not. Well, we own it. We bought it. This is our land. You can't cut down the tree. They had this big argument with the construction company. And what the final negotiation agreement was, the Canadian embassy decided to redesign the front of the embassy. Mm-hmm. So it has this wave. So it goes in this big curve. And the point of the curve was to allow the space to make the construction company happy, so people could have enough room to walk through and not go through a narrow space between the building and the tree.
They built the building around the tree. Mm-hmm. The most Canadian thing you could think of.
but keep in mind, I've never found any source to verify that. That was a story that was told to me years ago.
It's obvious it was built around the tree. The design of the building goes around the tree.
Right. I don't know if that's the actual story and how it happens, but it is a nice story anyway. And of course, never let facts get in the way of a good story.
Ah, yeah.
Beautiful. And the Canadian Embassy is a nice looking building as well. So that whole area, Jeongdong-gil, has some interesting buildings. Up behind it, there's the old Russian legation, the remnants of it.
Yeah.
The old tower, the White Tower.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about one day, because that's where King Kojong took refuge after the queen was assassinated.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. We'll get to that.
Do you remember much about Piano Street?
Piano Street? Do you mean... Yes.
I'm sure the old people who lived in Seoul a long time, way back when I mentioned that, they went, whoa, we're talking about that.
Right. I think when I first got here, it wasn't even called that. It may have been because I went there a lot. I went there a lot at the time when I first got to Korea.
Yeah. Well, I went there a few times, but back then my internal geography was not that good, so I didn't know I was there.
Oh, I see.
I couldn't place my, I didn't know where anything was. I would just go out of a subway station, meet someone there. And this is before we had smartphones to tell you where you are all the time. This is when you actually wrote stuff in a little notepad or inside the book you're reading at the time on the subway.
Right. Yeah. I went there a lot, just about every weekend, because I was always in Chungno. So I spent most of my time in that area around Piano Street, Insadong, Chungno Samga, Kwanghwamun. And I spent so much time around Daehangno because my girlfriend at the time, first girl that I dated in Korea, we dated for more than 3 years. I met her like 3 weeks after I got to Korea. She was going to, her university was in Daehangno, so we went there a lot. She went to the that old, what is the university, I don't remember, the very old, it's an old, originally was a Confucian university, anyway, and then she, but she lived all the way in Hanam and I lived in Ilsan, so Chungno Samga was a nice kind of midway point for us. So I spent so much time in that area.
I had a couple of dates in that area too, my first year. And I was going through old pictures of mine. Some of the first pictures I took in Seoul was in that area, and I didn't know it at the time. And so I have historic photos of how that used to be. There used to be like a, not a Quiznos, but a sandwich shop that doesn't exist in Korea. It's an American sandwich shop that doesn't exist in Korea anymore. Okay, this is why I'm bringing it up. I ended up getting, I had a job when I was working down there. This is around 2013 or so. And I would regularly walk in that area because that's where I would go out for lunches. And I do remember suddenly there was a sign that called it Avenue of Youth.
Yeah, right.
And the famous piano was gone. Now, this was called Piano Street because there was a giant, looks like sculpture of piano keys going down one of the roads. And I thought it was kind of charming. It was a little dirty, a little scuffed up from wear and tear, but I thought it was charming. And I thought only like foreigners called it Piano Street, but turned out, no, in Korean it was called Piano Street. And I was wanting to know, why did they change it? And what happened? And if you want to know, it's behind Boshingak in Gwancho-dong, if you want to know specifically. Back in the Chosun era, it was known as a very popular commercial center. But it turns out I wasn't paying that much attention because they had removed that piano back in 2009. And this was during the time when I call it the war on street food.
Oh, okay.
This is when the Seoul government and different district governments started trying to get rid of street food carts. And with many ways. Gangnam had violent ways. They would hire thugs, like mafia thugs, to turn over carts. That was lovely. And Jongno, they came with a new rule that you had to have a standardized street cart that you got from the city. And it was just drab, tan, brown, like I would say New Deal era. Brown. It's like FDR type of national park brown to it.
Just no, dull. No character at all.
No, and it would have, I think it would have the Jungno logo on it or something that says Jungno on it. And all street vendors had to have one of these street food carts. They couldn't have their own colorful carts anymore. And what they did was they got rid of the piano keys. They moved a lot of the vendors to some other place. And then any vendors who were allowed to be on the street had to use those special types of carts, and it got rid of the character.
It
neutered the whole area. Now all the cars that are there, just the same old stuff. It's just Dokboki and Chigim and Sunde. It's the same old stuff you get everywhere else. No, nothing unique. And I was trying to figure out, I couldn't figure out why they call it Avenue of Youth. In the press releases that kept going up, and again, they kept doing the same quotes, because that's what they do, is everyone copies the same press release and publishes it. There were claims that office workers in the area were saying that the street food carts were blocking them. They couldn't get through. Women didn't feel safe walking around there. And I'm like, really? It was that? Really? I mean, I went there many times and it was perfectly safe. It was just like anywhere else in Seoul. And it did have a lot of young people there.
Safer than a lot of other places in Seoul where people go, I'd say. But you don't know. There may have been some things that happened.
But this wasn't an isolated thing. Changing this piano street into the Avenue Youth was not an isolated event. It was part of a larger plan to change a lot of areas that the city leaders felt were undesirable. They weren't the ritzy type of soul they want to show to the world. They want everything to be blandified. Just want to strip all the character out of everything. So part of that was the renovation of Ikseondong. That's how we end up with Ikseondong now, which is the big hot spot before Corona, the big hot spot that the tourists and the Instagrammers would go to, which a lot of us old timers are like, oh, avoid it like crazy.
Yeah, just don't go there. There's no reason to go to Ikseondong. Also,
if you want bad Italian food, go there.
Bad Italian food in a renovated Korean home from the 60s, like 70s. Renovated
Hanok. And this is the sad thing, is I'm distracted talking about Ikseondong, is in order for a lot of these restaurants to move in, they had to really gut out a lot of the structure. So that when these restaurants inevitably close, and they are starting to go out of business now, went down there a few months ago and there's some shelves, the spaces can't be reused. They're going to have to tear down the structure, the hanok.
Yeah.
It's one use. It's just disposable hanok. That's what they're doing. And these days, when I was doing my research on Avenue of Youth, it just kept coming up with more recent articles about, after all this renovation, trying to make Avenue of Youth this hot spot, it's just crashed. It's mostly known for just having empty shops. It is, and I've seen it go through a few booms and busts. And these days, at the end of 2019, it was becoming a ghost town. There were some places that were empty for a long time. In fact, one article I read, the entrance to Avenue of Youth, where right next to the sign, there's a big space that was a Bang Bang Jeans. It had been empty for 2 years. And the reason was, I mean, the rent was just crazy high. You cannot get a space there unless you really have some, either you gotta have a really high margin product, excuse me, or you just gotta be a rich corporation that has money to burn. Where the Bang Bang Jeans was, it was a 50 million won deposit. So we're on 50,000 bucks, 50 million won a month rent.
Crazy.
Rent. How would you make that money selling blue jeans?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Who could afford that? What business could afford that? That is just general retail in that space. I can see E-Mart doing those numbers, no problem. But not like a little jean store.
It's designed specifically to promote gentrification.
Yeah,
I think that kind of stuff like that. Yeah,
and that place—it's kind of funny because Ikseondong, places like Ikseondong, drew away a lot of the customers too.
Right, right. Looking for something interesting, that which that that area used to be, Avenue of Youth. Yeah, when I first started going there, it was early 2001, probably around January, February 2001, maybe the first time I went through there. Mm-hmm. And it was packed. It was booming. Mm-hmm. It was just so popular. Everyone, most people were younger. I was in my early 20s at the time. I was like 20.
I was young back then too. Wow.
Yeah. So I was like 21. And yeah, it was just great. It was a great place to hang out. It was good restaurants, good bars.
I still think it's okay. I think it's good for chicken and beer, pub crawls.
Whereas there's that Shakespeare place.
There are a couple of bars we like there.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's the table and Shakespeare. Oh, and then,
the table's great.
Yeah.
So
if you want to go chicken and beer crawl, that is the place to go. And there's lots of good barbecue places down that way. Mm. I think so. Yep.
On the fringe, especially, I find on the fringe, I find there's a lot of good restaurants just on the edges of it.
Yeah,
there are a lot of good.
Baekjeong-won is just taking over the whole area. It's just I see Baekjeong-won restaurants, which
right.
Baekjeong-won, he's a good chef. Mediocre restaurants, just
right.
Anyway, that was my thing about Avenue of Youth. I'm not sure if that's really like a weird landmark, but Piano Street was just such a, that felt like a weird wild soul that we lost because of this was a period I am noting. So around 2005, we started seeing a lot of the weird artwork. And then 2008 was when, this is the email back administration. Yeah. Mm. Things were just getting really dumbed down, neutered. They wanted to get rid of anything that had character. They were getting rid of all the pojang matcha, all the soju tents that you see on Korean dramas. They were getting rid of them all. I was actually in a meeting with a government official, and they pulled me in for this meeting as an expert opinion. They had me in a meeting with the writer of the latest Lonely Planet. And they said they wanted me there to correct a lot of the problems with Lonely Planet had about Korean food. And they sent me an advanced copy of it. And I looked at it and I'm like, okay, maybe one translation was a little wrong. So I was curious. I went in anyway to find out what the big problem with the book was. And so I was introduced and he says, okay, well, what's the problem with the food? And the government official says, we don't like you putting budae jjigae in the Lonely Planet guide. Well, why? Because it's a reminder that we were once poor.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's why budae jjigae is like,
no, that's it's
not. It's definitely not cheap. Yeah,
this is what we need to get through. When the Korea, especially the Korean government, is promoting Korea, they don't care what tourists want. They care about what they want to show you. When they're promoting Korean food, promoting anything about Korea, it's always about what they want you to be educated about, not what you want to hear.
Yeah.
That's why we made the Dark Side of Seoul tour, because we got so tired of this.
And Seoul Hike, same thing. That's why I put Seoul Hike together. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
rather than this infantilized propaganda pablum.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Hablum, no. Okay, I brought this. The next thing is I brought this in because I just have conversations with tourists or just people visiting, and they're like, "Did I see a Trump building in Seoul?"
Yeah.
Why? Sure, yes, did. You did, and it's sure not did. A copycat. It is an actual Trump building. There are two of them. In Seoul, at least two. There are six of them. Well, there's six condominium properties around Seoul. There are a few more outside of Seoul, one Busan, in fact. There are Trump Worlds. And it's more of just something that Donald Trump has done. He's licensed his name on properties. He didn't actually build these properties. Mm. He doesn't even own these properties. They just have his name on it. These were properties built around Seoul around between 1999 and 2007. The most prominent ones you know of are in Yeouido and in Yongsan, right outside Yongsan Station. And they were built by Daewoo ENC, E&C, ampersand C. And back then, Daewoo had made a relationship with Donald Trump back in the 90s, late 90s, around 1997. And they were helping Trump promote this construction of a Trump Tower near the UN headquarters in Manhattan. And Trump provided the site and Daewoo built the tower. And so it started this relationship between Trump and Daewoo. And so Daewoo wanted to make these luxury apartments in Seoul with a name that would attract customers. And they decided Trump would be a good name. Now, keep in mind, this is the late 90s. This is back when Donald Trump was mostly known as doing beauty contests and making cameos in movies like Home Alone 2 and Little Rascals.
He wasn't even doing wrestling yet, right?
He made a cameo in a Sex and the City episode. I remember that too. It was the first buildings branded with the Trump name outside the U.S. So that's significant. And he got paid a total of $840,000 for using his name.
So if anyone out there wants to put Morrissey on a building and name it after me, and not the lead singer from the Smiths, not Stephen Patrick Morrissey, Sean James Morrissey, let me know. I'll do it for far less than $840,000.
Don't shortchange yourself. So in case you're curious, yes, Trump has visited the towers that bear his name. So he visited in 1999. This is where it gets a little weird. during his visit to Korea, he did tour Daewoo Heavy Industries. You know, they make boats and they make ships for military and for shipping. And he said that he wanted to commission a destroyer, like a boat, a destroyer boat. He wanted to use one as a yacht.
Military destroyer.
I don't know if he was joking or not, but the officials that were there were confused. I'm not sure if they thought he was joking or not. It took him literally. That he wanted to buy like a battleship to use as a yacht, a destroyer. I know. If you ever play Battleship, yacht. If you ever play Battleship, the game, then I always know the Battleship has two pegs. A destroyer has two pegs. Yes. Or
a yacht has two pegs.
A yacht would have two pegs.
You sunk my yacht.
My yacht. Oh, man. So anyway, yes, there are a couple of Trump buildings in Seoul.
Very, very prominent too when you're in the Yeouido area.
Yeah, it's very prominent. Now, I wonder how the people who live in those buildings think these days. I'm not sure. Really, I don't know. I hear they're pretty cool inside. Like they got swimming pools and the tree, like the lobby is supposed to look like a like luxury hotel lobbies. These apartments. All right. The next one I have is something we do feature on the tour. It's a Japanese air raid bunker next to Gyeonggi-gung Palace. A lot of people don't know it's there. Just like the Berlin Wall. People just don't even know it's there. And I only found out about this because one of my methods of getting information for the tour is getting Korean historians drunk. And I did that one time. Just drinking with a Korean historian and talking about the tour. He's like, you didn't know about the bunker next to Gyeonggi-gung? No. And I was like, oh my God, I park my car next to it all the time. I thought it was just some storage shed, which it kind of is used as that right now. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yes, next to Gyeonggi-gung Palace is a Japanese air raid bunker. One of the last, possibly the last one left in Korea. The last Japanese military structure outside of a military base. Because the American military bases used to be Japanese bases, and they repurpose a lot of the old Japanese buildings on those bases. Anyway, so why is there a Japanese air raid bunker next to Gyeonghaegung Palace? Well, did some research, found the story behind this. Finally, went around and found the story behind this. Around 1944, this is when the Pacific Theater in World War II is going badly for the Japanese. They felt, okay, they were thinking that the Americans would drop bombs in Korea. So they wanted to build some air raid bunkers, and they'd built a few. But there's this one that is next to Gyeonghaegung. Now, back at the time, Gyeonghaegung didn't really exist anymore. It was mostly torn down to make way for Gyeongsang Middle School. And this middle school was a mix of Korean and Japanese students, from what I'm reading. I'm not sure if that's totally true. Nonetheless, what I did find was true is they used the middle school students to dig out the infrastructure for this bunker. So instead of classes, they would just go out and manually dig a giant hole in the ground. And it turned out to be pretty big too. Like two stories deep, 7 meters wide, 5 meters high, 50 meters in length. Pretty big. And they wanted this to be like both double as an air raid shelter and a communications facility, just in case they got cut off from main Japan, from the main island. They wanted some type of broadcast way to broadcast and to receive messages. So they wanted a place that was kind of high and near what was the nearest post office at the time. And so they felt that Gyeonghaegung Palace was a good location. Also a plus that it was a cultural property area, so maybe it would deter bombings. So they built this, and it mostly still exists intact as an unchanged from how it originally was. Some ventilation shafts were closed down or covered up because school children were playing with them too much. and that was an issue. Is up until 1980, there was a school there. The Gyeongsang became like Seoul Middle School and Seoul High School, and they closed that down in 1980. Moved that to Gangnam, and after around the mid to late 80s, they rebuilt all of Gyeonghaegung Palace. Gyeonghaegung Palace is the most totally rebuilt out of all the palaces. It's not even the stuff is in the same location as it originally was. Mm. It's pretty much all torn down for the school, and they rebuilt it, and still being rebuilt. There's always something going on there. The rebuilding or redoing. You ever notice that, Sean? It's like we go through these long periods and there's all this construction work, and then some of the construction work's gone. And it's like nothing changed. What did they do?
Yeah, what did they do? The only thing I remember they did most recently was they did a massive kind of refacing of the ground. And I think they, because the grass in that area used to get pretty wet. So I think maybe they kind of improved they installed some drainage of some sort.
Because it did look like it was some type of drainage or sewage system they were installing.
Yeah. And then I think when they did that, and I don't know exactly, but also then earlier this year, they discovered something on the grounds. And I think it's the foundations of the school or something. I didn't end up following up. And
yeah, because it was an archaeological site. Ah.
Yeah. And it was modern. I went through it was all concrete and rebar, so 20th century. And I guessed it was part of the school. But I didn't follow up on it to see exactly what it was about or if they found anything. So I don't know anything much more than that. But yeah, there's always something going on there. Well, they blocked off the access to the main inner gate, and we couldn't get there for 2 months.
Yeah.
And then when they reopened access, yeah, I didn't notice anything different. Like you said, it's weird.
Yeah. So after you know, Japan lost the war. It's all returned. All these properties were returned to Korea. They're in Park Chung-hee administration. The dictator started in the 60s. He started taking over some of these old Japanese bunkers. And he started making his own. And a lot of these were built near cultural properties as part of what they called the Chungmu Plan. Installed some more of these bunkers near the tomb of Seongjong and Queen Jonghyun of the Joseon Dynasty.
And Seongnam.
A few other places that were the concubine of King Gojong was. They dug it up for broadcasting towers. And a lot of it was for communication towers. And they put it in cultural properties, again, thinking that they would be protected, you know, put military stuff near civilians or cultural properties, and the enemy won't destroy it. Well, during the Iraq War, we saw that wasn't totally true, since something related to the U.S. bombed a structure related to the original Tower of Babel during the Iraq War. Oh boy. Because there was military installations in it. Yeah. Anyway, so they've abandoned in the early 2000s, they decided to abandon using military structures by cultural properties, or using cultural properties to protect military structures. Many of the Japanese built shelters were demolished in the early 2000s. And the last one left is Gyeonghi-gun, the one by Gyeonghi-gun, which they keep talking about. They might make it that into a museum. We never hear that. These days, there's the Scooby-Doo van there.
Yeah, that's right. That's from the Olympics, I think.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's an Olympic. It's a minivan from the 1988 Olympics.
Right.
They cover it up, and it kind of looks like the Scooby-Doo van when it's covered up.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's right. Zoinks! Mystery machine. They did have tours down there maybe 2 or 3 years ago. There was one October, I think it was. They had tours there, but you had to call ahead. You had to book your tour.
God, I've got, even though us, we would have to see the inside of this place.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I don't know why they didn't maintain.
Why they didn't maintain it and why they didn't destroy it.
Yeah. Like I it's just sitting there. So I have no idea what the point of it is, really. If it's just sitting there, like the facade of it doesn't really do much for anyone.
What I'm reading, interesting, this is an article from 2017, was there's still debate in the government what that facility should be used for. Should it be used to point out the tragedies of the wars, or should it be used like a modern art gallery? Which I like the idea of doing both. Couldn't
you? Yeah. I know.
Last one I have again is about horrors, and I went and tried to confirm this from my source, and they said it's pretty well known. It is the Wedding Town in Ahyeongdong, near Iwa University for Women's University. Wedding Town is dying out these days, and it started out as three shops in the late 60s. Started booming in the 1970s and peaked around the late 80s with 100 shops on the street. It's all like bridal dresses. And the reason this boomed was, the story goes, is at the beginning of the Korean War, they were like the 1950, there was what they call the December massacres around Seoul. And I think this is where it's coming from, is the December massacres, where they were just murdering suspected communists around Seoul. And in Ahyeongdong, they massacred a group of women and children and buried them in a mass grave. and the wedding street was there, was created there to appease their ghosts. That's the legend that I have heard. Aihondong has historically been a poor neighborhood. It's featured in Parasite. That's where the family lives in Parasite. The poor family does. It was a place where it's right, even during the Joseon Dynasty, it was right outside the gates where they took the bodies to be buried. So all bodies had to be passed through this one gate. You talked to Robert Neff, he would tell us about it. And some of them were buried right outside the gate or further down. But either way, it was kind of a bring out your dead situation always in Aihondong. It's also where people from out of town, people that didn't live in Seoul, this is where they would settle. Foreigners would settle in Aihondong, poor foreigners, the laborers, foreigners that are there as laborers would go there. And it was really a crowded slum. And it had been that way. And it's only recently that it's been changed. They bulldozed a lot of the ghettos and turned them into factory stamped apartment complexes. Very few places are left of the original Aihondong of the slums there. I've seen some pictures. There's still some really, really old shacks that they haven't torn down yet, but they've barricaded them to prevent people from going inside because they could collapse.
Yeah. Last time I was in Aihondong, yeah, a lot of them were in really rough shape, just on the outskirts as well, just closer to Chungcheongno Station, mm-hmm. just behind the station. The condition of some of the housing there
is really interesting. Area dilapidated. I didn't put this in the notes too. Okay, so is this area between Gongdok and Aihyeon? And you know, if you follow the stations, it's like Gongdok, Aeoge, Chungcheongno. Well, for one thing, when they were redeveloping and starting in 2008, they had to stop it because they were just coming across too many human skeletons there to continue construction. That's a spooky. So pretty much it is a poltergeist situation there where they built the apartments on a lot of graves. When I was doing my original research for the Dark Side tour, I would take old maps and superimpose them on Google Maps, you know, line up all the rivers and creeks and streets and everything. And I did track down the location of where the Japanese POW camp was in Seoul. And this was a POW camp that they used for PR. Can you believe?
Relations?
Public relations. They had it where now is Aihondong. And they use it because they did it to show how well they were treating the prisoners. It was total smoke and mirrors, you know, Hollywood set. They'd set up the POW camp that is where Aihondong is now. Yeah. I went and checked it out. I even did Google Street View exactly where the POW camp was, and it's just villas. It's just streets. No evidence of what the place used to be at all.
No surface evidence. Yeah,
no surface evidence.
And just there, just near Chungcheongno as well, is the old Japanese building. That big green monster, the big ugly, ugly green building that's right next to Chungcheongno Station. It was built in the 1930s, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's right across the street from the Pungsun building. Pungsun's the big, is that steel company. That's a big, interesting, ugly building. There is a 7-Eleven on the first floor, and you can't miss it. So if you're in, you're in the area, if you're between Chungcheongno and Sademun, just go to Chungcheongno station.
Yeah.
Come out of gate number 9, I think. Or anyway, go towards the gate that will take you to the Pungsan building. And once you're in front of the Pungsan building, just look across the street. You'll see this big green monstrosity. Mm. That's a very strange building. It's got a weird smokestack running through the center of it. Mm. I have photos of it taken from the top floor of the Pungsan building. Looking down on it, very, very interesting.
No area, building. I kind of want to walk around from Sodimun down to Gungdok and places like Chungcheongno and Ayeon Dong Aeoge. Just this last little holdout of what Seoul used to be like just 30 years ago.
Right.
It's the last holdout. But it's kind of funny because I talk about the POW, this POW camp that you can't see anymore to finish up the episode on landmarks. And I finished with a landmark you can't find.
Right.
But that's it. I'm wrapping it up for now. There are more out there. I think we're definitely going to do this again. In fact, in my research, I got in touch with John Dunbar, and he's going to come on the show. And this guy's the expert on places like this. He actually used to run urban spelunking tours, urban exploration. Urban
exploration.
Tours. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he's got some good stuff, and he and Robert Neff tend to be a lot of my sources for information for the tour, and amongst others. But some of the harder stuff to find that you can't find through the research I do, I usually get it from those two people. Like the one abandoned area, which is now no longer abandoned, next to the U.S. ambassador's residence that had the spooky poltergeist tree that used to be used in rural ceremonies. Yeah, that had been abandoned. This been what's known as a brownfield zone, which is there are around 7 of those around Seoul that are just big spaces that are just not being used for anything in the middle of the city. And that was just one of those brown space zones. And now it's being used. There's something activity going there now.
Yeah, it looks like they're it's been a while since I've been through there, but yeah, it looks like they're going to finally put that tree on display because there were...
Oh, they are. Okay, so good. They're not knocking it down because it's a spooky, spooky tree.
Because there was a school in that area at one point, because I know John took, I think it was John Dunbar who took photos. He went up to the, what was it? The building, Gumho Asiana building.
Yeah,
the which building. No longer, they don't own that anymore. But he went up in that building and looked down on that when it was a brownfield zone, took photos of it. And you can see the foundations of some of the buildings and whatnot. Mm. So, yeah, I think, I don't know. I haven't heard anything official, but it does look like they are preparing it for display of some sort.
Mm. I hope so.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
We'll return to the podcast after this message.
Get our comic book, The Dark Side of Seoul, Weird Tales from Korean Lore, at our website, darksideofseoul.com, or get it at Comixology. If you're in Seoul, visit the Dice Latte near Hwaegi Station to get your copy. Written by me and drawn by Tim Bauer, it's 50 pages of folkloric dread. And now, back to the show.
Well, thank you for listening today. Just remember,
that was a light, fun episode.
That was fun. I love these episodes. So much better than talking about people dying, children dying, and being kidnapped and stuff. Molested. Anyway, now I got myself down by saying that.
Next week on the Dark Side of Seoul tour, people dying.
We'll go back to people dying again soon, back to our regular programming.
You're right.
Do we have any listener mail this week? I didn't even check before we started.
We, you know what? Yeah, I think we do, but I've been so busy that I didn't get a chance to prepare it. So we will prepare.
Someone asked
for...
us a question, right? Someone... Was there a question I was supposed to answer?
Hold on. Let's set it up for next time.
Alrighty. So, but please do go on our website, darksideofsoul.com, Facebook at, just look up Dark Side of Soul on our Facebook page and just write to us. And please subscribe to the podcast. If you're listening to us on the website, look to your right, or if you're on a phone, scroll down. Excuse me, scroll down a bit. I got the hiccups right now. Scroll down a bit and you will find icons for Apple Podcasts and for Stitcher, Spotify, all your favorite podcatching device. We're even on Google Podcasts. We're on Amazon. We're on Audible, I think we are. Yeah. So you can look at us through Alexa. You just subscribe. It really helps us out a lot. If you subscribe, if you leave a review for us, it really helps. Knock it on there. All right. Well, thank you, Sean. Thank you, everyone.
Jeff.
Good times. Until next time, stay spooky.
Good night.